America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program, Truth in Broadcasting.
And greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here with you, and happy Friday to you. Today, a little later on the program, we're going to be talking with Sebastian Kuntz of Green 960 AM, one of our affiliates down in San Francisco, about the Great Beach Impeach. It's an interesting gig, large event going on the beach down there in San Francisco over the weekend, basically anti-administration. So we'll be getting into that, and It's Anything Goes Friday. We'll be taking your calls throughout the show, throughout the program, on pretty much any topic you want to call about. But first, as always on our Friday programs, the first hour of our Friday program, Senator Bernie Sanders. His website, sanders.senate.gov. Senator Bernie Sanders, the only independent, well, not, one of two independents in the United States Senate, neither a Democrat nor a Republican, the longest-serving independent in the House of Representatives before he moved over to the Senate, serving from the great state of Vermont. I think of Bernie as America's senator. Bernie, welcome to the program.
Good to be with you, Tom.
Great to have you here for our Brunch with Bernie hour. And Bernie, of course, will be taking calls from you, our listeners, right after the first segment. Our telephone number, 1-866-303-2270. You can drop by our live chat room at tomhartman.com or our blog at airamerica.com. Bernie, the Wall Street Journal's going after you?
Well, I think I must be doing something right. I've been attacked by the editorial page of the Wall Street Journal twice in 1 week.
That's congratulations.
I'm feeling good. But the irony is I was attacked because of my positions on trade. And you know, as you and I have talked on this program many, many times, that in my view, our current trade policies are an absolute disaster for the middle class. It's costing us millions of good-paying jobs, leading us into a race to the bottom, leading us to an increased disparity of rich against the poor. And what was very interesting, on the same day that the Wall Street Journal attacked me for being a protectionist, there it was. This was yesterday's Wall Street Journal. Front page headline, Republicans grow skeptical on free trade. So the Wall Street Journal themselves did a poll, and what they found is that by a 59-32 percentage, the Republicans feel that foreign trade is not doing is doing badly for the United States.
Probably not the result the Wall Street Journal wanted.
That's not the results that they wanted. So, in fact, while they attack me and those of us who want a new trade policy to represent the needs of the middle class, it turns out that the Republicans themselves throughout this country understand that one of the reasons that the middle class is shrinking and poverty is increasing is our disastrous trade policy. And the Democrats actually, according to previous polls done by the Wall Street Journal, even feel more strongly about it than the Republicans do. So, I'm sorry.
Well, I was just going to say, if this is the case, Bernie, why is it that, you know, the main legacy of, or one of the main legacies of the Clinton presidency was free trade, you know, NAFTA and GATT and all that. And that torch is still being carried by Rahm Emanuel and
right.
the DLC, a lot of Republicans, or a lot of Democrats, rather, in both the House and the Senate.
Well, two things. I think since NAFTA and since the disastrous results of NAFTA, not just for the United States, but for Mexico as well, you have seen more and more anti-unfettered free trade sentiment. And let's be clear, trade is a good thing if it is done properly, trying to protect workers. It is not a good thing as it is presently done, which is legislation as often as not written by the large multinationals that are designed just to benefit the large multinationals. So I think what you have seen over the last 12, 14 years since NAFTA is a decline in support for unfettered free trade because the American people, whether they're conservatives, progressives, or whatever, they're just looking out into their communities. And what they are seeing is more and more manufacturing plants being shut down. They're seeing white-collar jobs leaving the United States of America. They're seeing poverty increasing. They're seeing the loss of good-paying jobs being replaced by jobs that barely pay a living wage. And the trade deficit soaring, and that's what people are seeing with their own eyes. Now, in terms of what's going on in Congress, as usual, the Congress is way behind the American people on these issues, and that's because of the impact of money. I can remember every trade agreement, whether it was the permanent normal trade relations with China, whether it's NAFTA, whether it's CAFTA, huge amounts of money coming in. I saw newspapers in Washington, D.C., some of these gossip sheets they have there,
mm-hmm.
saying very clearly that if Republicans vote against NAFTA, they will lose their campaign contributions. Right in the newspapers. But very hard to see. Nothing subtle about it.
This used to be called bribery, you know?
This is called legal bribery, right. So the good news, I think, is we are seeing a clear shift in sentiment in this country on trade. Very important issue. We got to get a handle on it, and that's something we will be working on. And by the way, I don't know what the results will be, but in Costa Rica this Sunday, there will be the first referendum ever held where all of the people can decide on whether or not they want a free trade agreement. This is a CAFTA agreement between Costa Rica and the United States. I can tell you that the United States government is working overtime trying to support it. The Costa Rican government, all of the media there is going crazy trying to support it. They are outspending, the yeses are outspending the noes by something around 100 to 1.
Hmm.
100 to 1. And yet, you know what the last poll had? Last poll had the noes slightly ahead. So we don't know what the results will be. And,
well, even when Clinton pushed it through in 86, as I recall, or what was it, 83, whatever year it was, the majority of Americans were opposed to it, as I recall.
The American people do not like these trade agreements because they understand that they don't want to be competing against people in China who make 30 cents an hour. It's a race to the bottom, and that's what's happening. So that's an issue that people should pay attention to. I think there's a groundswell change in the American people's attitude toward trade, and we're going to be working on that issue. Another issue that's out there that you will see action in the next coming months is global warming and an energy bill. And I'm on the committees that deal with this issue. To my mind, without going off on a long tirade here, the main focus has got to be that we can move very effectively in energy efficiency. We can move very strongly and create a whole lot of jobs in sustainable energy. We haven't begun to tap the potential of solar energy, both larger solar plants and photovoltaic rooftop units. Wind energy has huge potential. We held a hearing on this issue just 10 days ago or so. We can create millions and millions of good-paying jobs as we break our dependency on fossil fuel, move to sustainable energy, move to energy efficiency. That's the huge issue. As many of the listeners know, our president decided that, yes, he has enough. He has hundreds of billions of dollars available for tax breaks for millionaires and billionaires. He's delighted to be spending $10 billion a month on the war in Iraq, but apparently we just don't have enough money to expand health insurance to our children. He is vetoed.
Although he did proclaim yesterday as National Child Health Day.
Jesus. Did he really?
He really did. He issued a proclamation. Yesterday was National Child Health Day.
While he has vetoed a bill that would expand health insurance to some 4 million more children. Now, let's be clear. In my view, at least, this bill that Bush is vetoing did not go anywhere near far enough. We have some 9 million kids in this country without any health insurance. We're the only major country on earth that does not provide health care coverage for all of its people and certainly all of its children. This was a step in the right direction, and apparently Bush, who is there to protect the interests of the insurance companies, feels that we can't do it. We have the votes in the Senate because a number of Republicans, to their credit in the Senate, have supported this legislation. We can override his veto in the Senate. The latest guess is that we just don't have enough votes to override his veto in the House. It may be closer than people think, but at this point, the guess is that we don't have.
So now's the time for people to go to callcongress.org and get one of the phone numbers. There's all the toll-free numbers as well as the main number for the House of Representatives and call their elected member of the House and say, please vote to override Bush's veto of S-CHIP.
Absolutely. This is just an absolute national disgrace. We should be providing health care to all of our children. This is providing health care to 4 million out of the 9 million uninsured, and that Bush would veto this is literally beyond comprehension. All right, on some better news, a couple of weeks ago, the Congress passed and Bush signed, because I think the pressure was just too great for him to veto it, and we had overwhelming support, a higher ed funding bill, which is the most significant improvement in higher ed funding since the GI Bill of Rights. It's a very, very significant step forward.
Yeah, and I know you were very active in that, and that's it's a great program. We're talking with Senator Bernie Sanders. It's our Brunch with Bernie Hour. Senator Sanders will be taking your calls right after the break. Our number, 866-303-2270, if you want to drop into our live chat room, TomHartmann.com. However you spell it, we'll get you there, AirAmerica.com, for our blog, 16 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to Tom Hartmann, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
And welcome back. 21 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartmann Radio Program, our Brunch with Bernie segment. Senator Bernie Sanders, sanders.senate.gov, his website. Check it out. You can get on his newsletter. In fact, I got one yesterday with all the news of the day. Bernie, ready to take some phone calls here?
Absolutely.
Okay. 1-866-303-2270. Paul on Round Mountain, California. You are on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good morning, gentlemen. I wanted to ask you what your opinion of David Obey's position on not letting the appropriation, the war appropriations bill out of his committee is.
It's not letting it out without there being a tax of 15% on the upper classes and 2% on the middle class to pay for it, as I recall.
I think absolutely that we need tax reform in this country, not only to pay for the war in Iraq, but to do many, many other things. What we have been seeing in this country for the last many years is the wealthiest people becoming much, much wealthier, while Bush has, in fact, lowered their tax rates. And we will be working with a number of people in the Senate to come up with a tax program which begins to ask the wealthiest people in this country to start paying their fair share of taxes, not just for the war, but for the to address the fact that we have the highest rate of childhood poverty, that our infrastructure is collapsing in many other areas. So the idea of a progressive tax reform, which asks the wealthiest people to stop paying their fair share of taxes, is exactly right. I am not sympathetic to raising taxes on the middle class.
Maurice in Atlanta, in fact, you were the guy who originally proposed the $300, let's give $300 to everybody in the middle class to jumpstart the economy that Bush appropriated.
That's right.
Yeah. Maurice in Atlanta, Georgia, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hello, gentlemen. How are you?
Good.
Good.
I want to make this really quick. I want to urge you to once again push for public financing of campaigns. It's the key to everything. And the question is, what do you think the chances are of a total reevaluation of all these trade deals in the coming years, because that is really across the board. All of these countries will not do what we have been doing in lowering our trade barriers to these products over years, and that's why we are in the situation we're in.
All right, well, Maurice raises two very important issues, and he is right when he says that public financing of elections is the key to everything. The reality of politics in Washington, D.C., is that on issue after issue, this was especially true and absolutely true under the Republican leadership, every single piece of legislation, whether it was Medicare Part D, whether it was trade policies, whether it was tax policies, all of these pieces of legislation were directed by big money interest. And that is one of the reasons that the wealthiest people in this country have never had it so good while the middle class is shrinking and poverty is increasing. And Maurice is also right on trade. And as I mentioned at the beginning of this program, the American people understand that unfettered free trade is not working for them. It's resulting in huge trade deficits. It's resulting in the loss of millions of good-paying manufacturing jobs and white-collar jobs, and that we need an entirely new approach to a trade which, among other things, begins demanding that these large multinationals start reinvesting in the United States of America and not just in China and other low-wage countries.
Yeah, I've had people call me a protectionist on this program, and you know, I don't know if you would wear that label or not, but I do proudly. I believe in protecting the United States of America.
Yeah, what is wrong with protecting? I mean, everybody understands that trade is a good thing if it is shaped properly. But to say that to plead guilty to protecting decent-paying American jobs and a decent standard of living for the middle class, yeah, I'll plead guilty to try to protect that.
There you go. Rick in Grand Rapids, Michigan, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, good morning, gentlemen. Bernie, I wanted to comment on this S-CHIP program. Now, the critics of it are saying, I guess Pat Buchanan is one of them, that it includes too many people from the middle class and higher income. Now, I might agree with that, and you and Tom might too, but here's the problem, as you know, isn't the real problem whenever we have these programs, if we target it only to the very poor, then, of course, it's susceptible to criticism by the conservatives by saying, well, you've got these poor people, many of whom just aren't ambitious enough to get a job and provide for their own health care. Whereas if you make it more universal, as Social Security is, then it's immune from criticism.
Well, Rick, you're touching on two issues, and your latter point is absolutely right. That is why what Bush wants to do is to make changes in Medicare so that, quote-unquote, people above 80,000 will start paying more. Ultimately, what they want to do is destroy the universality of Medicare and Social Security so that over a period of time, it will end up becoming a welfare program for low-income people and not have public support.
Because welfare programs are easier to cut.
That's right. Of course, because they're not going to have strong middle-class support. I believe that in terms of health care, we have got to join the rest of the industrialized world and say that health care is a right. 100 years from now, people are going to look back and say, I can't believe it, that because somebody did not have a job where the employer was providing decent health insurance, their kids didn't have any health care. What sense is that? Health care is a right. We need a national health care program.
Yeah, it's right there in the Declaration of Independence. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. What's more intrinsic to life than being able to see the doctor when you're sick?
That's right.
I mean, it's just... Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Brunch with Bernie. Sanders.Senate.gov. His website, ours, TomHartman.com and AirAmerica.com. 866-303-2270. If you'd like to talk with Senator Sanders, 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Welcome back. 34 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman with you. It's our Brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders taking your calls. Charles in Cincinnati, Ohio. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good deal. Thanks, Tom, sir. Senator Sanders, my question is, have you heard about the situation with the Red Bulls out of Minnesota, the longest-serving unit in this conflict, and the situation with their orders being printed one day short of full educational benefits? And also, are we going to have any corrective action on the voting machines before the election?
Yeah, just to recap what Charles said for our listeners who may not be familiar, the apparently this National Guard unit was, they all thought that after serving 800 days, in fact, it was written that if you serve 800 days in Iraq, then you get full GI Bill benefits. And the feds pulled them out after 799 days, and they're denying them benefits.
That's outrageous. I'm sure that the senators from Minnesota, Amy Klobuchar and Norm Coleman, know about that, and that is something that should be addressed. I mean, our men and women who have served in Iraq have served under such horrendous conditions that we have got to do everything that we can to take care of them. And certainly the need for educational opportunities for those soldiers is very important. I will certainly support some type of waiver to make sure that they get what they're entitled to.
Yeah, indeed. Morris in Laguna Woods, California. Morris, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Senator Sanders. I'm going to try to make it as brief as possible. I go back to, well, I'm a veteran of World War II, and I was brought up during the Hitler era, of course, and I am only too familiar with the stormtroopers, at least the history of the stormtroopers.
Sure.
Here we have a group of so-called consultants, we call them now, we call them mercenaries, tens of thousands of them in Iraq, and still being trained by this Blackwater group. And nobody has raised the possibility, I hope it never comes to that, and this particular White House group will be in power at least until the end of 2008. Nobody has come to think about how these mercenaries could be used here in this country to quell civil unrest, so to speak. Has anybody given any thought to the use of these people domestically by some administrators like that?
Some people have, but the issue that you're raising, Morris, is an issue that, as you know, is getting a lot of attention, especially with the recent scandals involving Blackwater activities in Iraq. But the broader issue is that Don Rumsfeld made very radical and sweeping changes in the military, moving toward privatization of many, many functions of the military. What we know is that there has been the loss of billions, the unaccountability, I should say, of many billions and billions of dollars. And there has been the giving over of basic military services to private contractors like Blackwater, which raises very serious concerns on the part of many of us. So I think what you are going to see in the coming weeks and months is a very hard look at the kind of changes that Rumsfeld has brought in the military, not to mention the whole privatization efforts that Bush has made all over this country to get rid of federal employees. I think you will see a hard look at that, and I think as part of that discussion, certainly the issue that you raise of what do you do, what does it mean that you have these well-trained mercenaries, and what might that mean for the United States? But that is an issue that will be looked at.
Mitchell in Mawa, New Jersey, listening to WWRL. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Good afternoon, Senator Sanders and Tom. My question concerns the reauthorization of funding for the Iraqi war. Now, I know that senatorial opponents of the war do not have enough votes to stop debate on any bill that would specify a timeline for withdrawal, and much less to override a presidential veto for a spending bill with those particulars. However, there are enough votes to delay or not put forth any bill at all as a means of leveraging a change in policy, and the argument that I hear against that is that we would be denying essential protections to our troops. But, you know, everybody's also saying that there's so much billions of dollars of waste in the military budget. So my question is, what would the actual effect on the troops be with such a measure, and why should or should we not use that tactic to force a change?
That's a good question, Mitchell. I am not sure that we have the votes not to bring forth any funding whatsoever. I think
it would take 41 votes in the Senate, wouldn't it?
Yeah, and I don't think you have that many votes. The strongest piece of legislation to bring our troops home as soon as possible in a defined period of time is the Feingold-Reed bill, which I consistently have voted for. And I can't remember. I think it had about 27 votes this week. So I just don't think.
So getting to 41 votes just to say, no, we're not going to, basically to filibuster, to support a filibuster of any introduction of legislation, even that's not possible right now.
I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I mean, I think you'd probably have this, you know, no, I don't think you would have the 40 votes.
What about the leadership of the House and Senate? What about Harry Reid and Nancy Pelosi? Do they have the power, regardless of the inclination, do they have the power to refuse to bring legislation like this to the floor?
Do they have the power not to bring an appropriation? Technically speaking, I don't know the answer. I suspect they may have the power, but there would be just tremendous pressure from. I mean, basically, what we'd be saying is that you're not going to provide any funding for troops at all, or military
yeah, and that would be
services for troops at all, or taking care of, you know, the hospital, military hospitals and so forth. There would be tremendous pressure. So technically they might, but it ain't going to happen.
Yeah, and it would be probably considered an abuse of power on their part.
Yeah.
David in New York City, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders. David?
Yes, good afternoon. My question is, why is the U.S. tolerating such a weak dollar? It seems like every week it's hitting a new record low against other currencies. And conversely, if we're going to tolerate such a weak dollar, why aren't we doing more to encourage foreign tourists to visit the United States? It seems like we're doing everything we can to add more restrictions to foreign travelers coming to the country.
Well, one of the I noticed something. Well, I mean, the so-called foreign the restrictions are that we, as what the Homeland Security people are doing is you know, doing a lot of checks at the borders in various ways. I got to tell you, right now I'm speaking to you from Richford, Vermont, which is a great town right on the Canadian border. And one of the concerns that we have had is that lines have been backed up for a long period of time, and we're making some progress on that. But one of the interesting things, Tom, is did you know that tourism, foreign tourism into the United States is actually significantly down? Did you know that?
Yeah, I've heard that stat, and it surprises me because the U.S. is one of the cheapest destinations in the world now for people in the rest of the developed world,
well, that
given
makes,
how bad our dollar is.
The dollar situation, but I think it really says something about the attitude of Europeans and others toward the United States right now.
It's like they don't want to come here because that would be viewed as supporting
the
Bush administration policies.
Yeah. I mean, I just learned this a couple of weeks ago, and I was really surprised. But what Bush has done is lowered the esteem that people have for this country all over the world. And interestingly enough, it is manifesting itself in a significant reduction in foreign tourists coming into America.
Yeah, interesting. Doug in Staten Island, New York, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Yes, good afternoon. Thank you very much for taking my call, Tom and Mr. Sanders. It's a pleasure. I've been a contributor towards your campaigns, and I wish we could clone you somehow. Sir, listen, I know in the past there's the adage that people who fail to learn history are doomed to repeat it. I'm more in line, I think, with I think it's George Santayana. The only thing we learn from history is that we fail to learn. I'm calling about the Quds designation as a terrorist force. I actually read it, and it says that they...
You're talking about the Kyle Lieberman Amendment.
Yeah, the Lieberman... yeah, and it says that this will allow us to, quote, combat, contain, and stop Iran via military instruments, unquote. And that's 76 to 22. And I'm wondering, you know, we had the Patriot Act. They said, oh, well, we didn't read it. We had the Military Commissions Act. Oh, we weren't, you know, we weren't aware of the fine-tuning. We just had this surveillance program. Oh, it's only for 6 months. We didn't really have a chance to see how bad it was. And oh, I'm just wondering, why do we keep doing this? And why should people even feel like you guys are really doing what you're supposed to be doing there?
All right. Well, Doug, if you looked at it, I voted against that. I was one of the 22 who voted against it. What happens, I think, the political dynamic is that somebody reads a list of whereases, which, you know, let's be clear, this Iran is, in my view, a dangerous country. I have great concerns about their leadership. But anyway, you read a list of whereases about how bad they're doing, nuclear weapons, blah, 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 and then you create the kind of mentality there that kind of makes people feel that they're soft on terrorism, that if they vote against this, they will be bombarded by 30-second TV ads about how un-American they are and unpatriotic they are. I mean, when I ran for re-election, that's what happened. I voted against it because I think giving Bush more ammunition to go to war against Iran would be an absolute unmitigated disaster.
And hopefully time proves that you were wrong, but I fear that you were right. Senator Bernie Sanders with us, our Brunch with Bernie segment, our hour, rather. We'll be back with more of your calls for Senator Sanders right after this, 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, Viagra for your brain, on Air America Radio. Call 866-303-2270.
9 minutes before the hour. Tom Hartman with you. It's our brunch with Bernie hour. Senator Bernie Sanders with us. Sanders.Senate.gov, his website. Our number 866-303-2270. Scott in Virginia Beach, Virginia. You're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Senator Sanders. I'm a disabled vet. There was no happier people than the DAV guys when the Democrats got in. You guys always appropriate us more money, but it doesn't do us any good when Bush will veto it. Now, you know.
No, Bush is not going to veto this. Scott, Bush, trust me on this one. I know that there's a lot of politics that's going on, and the Democrats kind of want to put other stuff on it. At the end of the day, Scott, and I'm on the Veterans Committee, the veterans are going to see the largest increase in funding for the VA in the history of the VA. Some of us are paying special attention to the needs of disabled vets so that those guys who are coming back from Iraq will be able to have the money to drive cars that need retrofitting and in their homes that need special attention. You're going to see that.
Well, I'm 100%, so I'm taken care of well. But the deal is, and I'm sure you know, we need to get taken from discretionary to mandatory, and Bush is never going to sign that. My question to you is, when a Democrat gets in, are you guys going to get us on the mandatory so we don't have to come hat in hand every year and beg?
Well, Scott, you are exactly right. And for the listeners who are not vets, what happens is every single year is this great debate. Well, I don't think there should be a great debate. I think that when people are wounded, when people serve this country, come back disabled, they are entitled. If there's ever been an entitlement, that's it. And I'm on board that legislation. I can't make promises to you. I don't know who the president is going to be. But certainly the next president, I hope and expect, will be a hell of a lot better than Bush on veterans issues. And I will fight to make sure that these programs, in fact, are mandatory for our veterans.
Good on you. Bob in Dearborn, Michigan, you're on the air with Senator Bernie Sanders.
Hi, Tom. Hi, Senator Sanders. Speaking of next presidents, I heard you earlier talking about NAFTA and GATT and trade issues. If, for instance, Hillary Clinton is elected president, what gives you reason, Senator, to think that she would be willing to even listen or to overturn any of the stuff that her husband passed?
Well, Bob, that's a fair question. I think if you listen to what she is saying, my understanding is, for example, she's going to vote against the South Korean Free Trade Agreement. I think she's open to looking at other treaties. I'm not here to defend Senator Clinton's position on trade. I think what we have seen since Clinton pushed NAFTA is a huge groundswell of change on trade in general. And any good politician understands that you don't want to be defending a point of view which is a real, real minority. The trade agreements that Clinton and Bush have brought forth, in my view, have not worked for American workers, and I would hope that the next president of the United States, no matter who he or she may be, will understand that. I can tell you that in Congress, more and more members are in opposition to current trade policies.
Yeah, and we should toss in the caveat. The last caller referred to you guys as if you were a Democrat, and this caller implied it. Although you caucus with the Democrats, you are not
a
Democrat. You're an independent.
And proud of it. Tom, I know we don't have a whole lot of time. Let me just,
yep.
Then that's a good segue into what I want to say is, and we should appreciate this. The very good news right now is I think the American people have had it up to their eyeballs with right-wing extremism. And there is a growing, I think, understanding that everything being equal, you're going to see less and less support for Republican candidates in the coming election. My concern is, and where I want people to be active, it's not just good enough to elect Democrats. We have got to elect progressives, people who are going to stand up and take on moneyed interests, people who are going to fight for a national health care program, people who are going to fight to defend workers in trade policies, people who are going to fight for a tax policy so that we can ask the wealthy to pay more in order to fund the veterans' needs. A moment ago, we heard about a veteran talking about the need for mandatory funding for our veterans. He's right. It's an expensive proposition. Can we afford it? We can. But in order to do that, we're going to have to ask the wealthiest people in this country, the largest corporations in this country, to stop paying their fair share of taxes. So what we need to do, it's not just focus on this or that candidate. That's important. We need to do a lot of discussion on the real issues facing the middle class, the working class. lower income people. We got to figure out how we can change our national priorities. Trust me, this country has the wealth to provide a decent standard of living for all of our children, all of our people, all of our working people. But in order to do that, we're going to have to take on some very powerful and wealthy special interests, and we need people in Washington to do that.
All right, and back to the idea of public financing, $6 per taxpayer per year would provide an amount of money equal to all the money spent in each of the last elections.
And that makes eminent sense to me. I'd much rather have public financing and pay that $6 than have the big money interests elect their candidates.
Yeah. We have about a minute left here. Raphael in Los Angeles, California, you have the last question for Senator Sanders.
Thank you very much. Senator, I have a question for you. I speak as an attorney, a criminal attorney. Senator Craig was busted in June. He declared himself guilty in August, which the judge said, you know, when he appealed the case, that there's no way. I mean, the guy had full knowledge of what he was doing. What does the Senate plan to do about that?
Well, the Republicans are quite unhappy about Craig's desire to stay on. There is some thought that they're going to have an ethics investigation regarding him, and we will see what happens.
I'm guessing that ethics investigation is going to go away. I think that was their threat to him, and it didn't work. He called their bluff on it, but it's going to be interesting for the whole. Have you seen the new Republican logo for the convention, Bernie?
No, I haven't.
The elephant is blue. And it has stripes on it, looks like prison bars, and it's up on its hind legs. The only time elephants get up on their hind legs is when they're having sex. they just can't get anything right these days. Senator Bernie Sanders, thanks so much for being with us, Senator.
Okay, my pleasure, Tom. Take care. Bye.
Great talking with you, Bernie. 57 minutes past the hour. Your calls, Anything Goes Friday, coming up next.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Program on Air America Radio, defending America from the weapons of mass deception.
And welcome back. Well, they're still at it. I mean, this is just this ongoing train wreck of the Limbaugh program. In fact, tomorrow morning, 7:15, I'll be on Fox and Friends talking about this. So it's an appropriate time for a new Rush Alert.
Condescending clients making money selling lies. You might say, everybody hates my guts.
Hates his guts.
I'm offensive, I'm a bigot, I'm a fraud. Can you dig it? I'm sexist, racist, homophobic, fat, pathetic guts.
And now we find the liberals doing what they always do, and I've told you this. They always try to give me 50 milligrams of Vicodin instead of the 80s.
I'm a Nazi. He's a Nazi.
That's right.
Yes,
I am, because I'm a Nazi.
And making money very well, apparently. This month is the 18th month since Bush, since Rush was convicted and the end of his probation. So he's no longer on probation for his narcotics arrest. Does that have something to do with it? Is he back on the juice or the pills? Really, you know, in my opinion, there's two issues here. One is how pathetic it is that he keeps trying to lie his way out of a hole. 5 years ago, 3 years ago, probably even 1 year ago, he could have gotten away with it. But he can't get away with it anymore. The American people are waking up. They're saying, hey, enough already. We get it, what's going on. And then secondly, why are our tax dollars being paid for this guy who's on the, during the same day period, by the way, Rush Limbaugh and I have both been on noon to 3 Eastern time. I've been on for the last 5 years. He's been on for the last 15. We're in the same day part. Why are the American people paying for his program where he never has liberals on the air? I have conservatives on the show constantly. For his show to be on Armed Forces Radio rather than a program that is a little more, shall we say, fair and balanced, except, of course, when it comes to Rush.
In closing, let me say that each and every day, I'm an evil, rotten, egotistical snob. I'm the cop of Joe McCarthy-like Gestapo, the right-wing, foam-at-the-mouth, jack-booted slob.
Now, another media news, Chris Matthews. This is interesting. And you wonder, there was some discussion in some of the media, what would you call it? You know, the media equivalent of the what People magazine is to celebrities and National Enquirer is to celebrities. There are similarly newsletters and websites and whatnot devoted to the media, to talk radio, to conservative talk radio, to liberal talk radio, to television, to political television. And there was some speculation 3 months ago, and I never saw a definite confirmation of it, but the buzz was. So, you know, let me just make it very, very clear. This is all falls into the category of rumor. The buzz was that MSNBC was trying to figure out which way to go politically, because they had historically, at least over the last 5-6 years, been a very conservative network. In fact, they took Phil Donahue off the air in 2002, even though he was more popular than the Chris Matthews show, which was their number two show, Hardball. The Phil Donahue show had more viewers. It was the only truly profitable show at that time on MSNBC, more advertisers. They took it off the air because Donahue was questioning going into the war in Iraq. This was a couple of months before the war in Iraq. And the memo leaked out from the consultant to General Electric, which owns MSNBC, along with Microsoft. The consultant saying, you know, we really don't want to have an anti-war, I'm paraphrasing now, we really don't want to have an anti-war voice on the air as we lead up to this war. And nobody is sure exactly why. Maybe because, gee, it wouldn't be profitable for General Electric, which is a defense contract. Who knows? Maybe it just wouldn't be good for ratings. But the fact of the matter is that MSNBC had been kind of the conservative network. You know, with Joe Scarborough and Chris Matthews had been taking two to three, I think, is what Media Matters says. Two-thirds of all of his guests over the last few years have been conservatives, and not just conservatives, hard-right, toxic, right-wing extremists. And they continue to be to some extent. But he's got Katrina Vandenhoevel on a more regular basis, and like he's had Amy Goodman on a few times. So the speculation was, is MSNBC going to go more to the left to try to become the left-wing version of Fox News? Are they going to go more to the right to try to out Fox News, although Fox's ratings are starting to collapse? Or are they going to try and compete with CNN and just go right down the middle, other than conceivably Jack Cafferty, although Jack's politics, I mean, you know, Jack's an old Republican, or at least has professed to be, although he doesn't like this administration, as is the case with a lot of old Republicans. So anyhow, Chris Matthews, this story in the Examiner, the National Examiner, examiner.com. Chris Matthews he was speaking to an audience, including such notables as Alan Greenspan and Patrick Kennedy and Ted Kennedy. And he starts out by saying, I'm going to make some news here. And then he goes on to point out that in all the years that he was broadcasting, when he was on the air throughout the 8 years of the Clinton administration, nobody ever from the Clinton administration said, do or don't do this particular story. They never tried to pressure him, and they certainly never tried to pressure his bosses. And then he went on to say, not so this crowd, speaking of the Bush White House. Especially those from Vice President Cheney's office, he said, called MSNBC brass to complain about the content of Chris Matthews' show and attempted to influence his editorial content. And then Matthews says, they will not silence me. He says, they've finally been caught in their criminality. Spiro Agnew was not an American hero. Matthews left the throng of Washington A-listeners with a parting shot at Cheney, according to the Examiner. God help us, he said. If we had had Cheney during the Cuban Missile Crisis, we'd all be under a parking lot. Now, this is going to be really interesting because Tuesday of next week, the Republicans are debating in Dearborn, Michigan, and guess who's going to moderate it? Chris Matthews. It's going to be interesting to see how that shakes out. You will recall a week or so ago, I did virtually an entire show, certainly an hour devoted to the story of Mr. Siegelman, the guy who, the governor of Alabama, who is now in prison. Well, it turns out that the the fellow who provided the testimony that put Siegelman in jail, Clayton Lamar Lanny Young Jr. They refer to him as Lanny Young. He was a lobbyist. He was a landfill developer. His friends called him a hard-drinking, good old boy. And by the way, the tip of the hat to Coase over at Daily Coase for pulling together all this information. Great job. On May 8th, 2002, Lanny Young sat down with the U.S. attorney from Montgomery, Alabama. Remember the whole U.S. attorney scandal? What's it really about? And I've been saying on this program for the better part of a year now since this thing came out, that what the real issue, what the real story is of the U.S. attorney scandal is not about the nine guys who got fired because they refused to play the game. The real story is what about the guys, the 70-some-odd, who didn't get fired, and what did they do? Well, it turns out that this guy, this informant, Lanny Young, sat down with the U.S. attorney in Montgomery, Alabama, and laid out to him stories of his paying tens of thousands of dollars in apparently illegal campaign contributions. Now, that's a fancy way of saying bribes to some of the biggest names in Alabama Republican politics. This included former Attorney General Jeff Sessions, who is now a U.S. Senator, William Pryor Jr., who is now the Attorney General, actually followed Sessions as the Attorney General, is now a federal judge, and Mr. Siegelman. So here we have an informer, Lanny Young, telling the U.S. attorney, the Bush appointee in Montgomery, Alabama, okay, we got two Republicans and a Democrat, and I've been bribing all three of them. Jeff Sessions, William Pryor, and Seligman. And guess who they decided to prosecute? Excuse me, Siegelman. They decided to prosecute Siegelman, and they didn't even investigate. They didn't even launch an investigation into what Jeff Sessions, now U.S. Senator Jeff Sessions, had been doing, or what William Pryor Jr., now federal judge William Pryor Jr., had been doing. Didn't even launch an investigation. This is what we're talking about when we talk about the politicization of the U.S. Attorney's Office, that they will go after the Democrat, and by the way, the only Democrat who really had a chance of holding a major office, the governor in that state, and continuing to hold that. They went after a Democrat, and he actually, you know, was convicted and put in prison, but they refused not only to go after, not only to prosecute the two Republicans who were equally indicted by this informant, they refuse to even investigate it. Why is this not on the front page of the New York Times? Hopefully it will be soon. 16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio.
Of stocking looked on to something shocking. Now heaven knows anything goes.
Anything goes. Friday, we'll be taking your calls in just a moment on any topic that you want to bring up for the day. A couple things that I did want to share with you, and one is just how strange it's getting out there. Here, and this is the only one I know of. Maybe there's others, but the presidential straw poll on AM 620 KPOJ in Portland, Oregon, the website 620kpoj.com, has, first of all, the presidential campaigns, Dennis Kucinich and John Edwards way out ahead on the Democratic side, Ron Paul taking the field on the Republican side, but in the write-ins, my cat Higgins! Higgins, he has a poverty program, Purina Natural Blends for All, Purina One. He'd like a nationwide physical fitness program because he enjoys chasing people and attacking them when they visit the house. He'd like all dumb dogs to be more highly educated. And the only bribe he would, excuse me, campaign contribution he would accept is food, especially Purina. He'll take food. Oh, my. Well, 1-866-303-20. Yes, yes, you can vote for Higgins over at 620kpoj.com. Patricia in Los Angeles. Hey, Patricia, what's on your mind today?
Yes, hello. Thank you for taking my call. I
sure.
really appreciate all that you do. I'm calling because I wondered if anyone brings up the topic. I've not heard it to date with regard to the AMA and their source of income. And in particular, you know, in general, the profit side of medicine and how it connects with the insurance industry, the pharmaceuticals, the insurance.
Well, maybe you can educate me. I know that AARP, for example, most people don't realize that their major form of income comes from selling insurance. They're basically an insurance, you know, front organization. But the American Medical Association, I had always assumed that their revenues came both through membership fees of doctors, through their publication, the Journal of the American Medical Association, the advertising therein, which I guess is money from the pharmaceutical industry by and large, and from, you know, workshops and seminars and things like that that they put on. Am I missing something?
Well, you might check into the CPT coding, because these books are sold, I believe, yearly, and any medical practitioner of any scope of practice that's interfacing with the insurance industry is required to use them, in addition to the computer software and training of the employees. The cost is, you know, it's another layer. It's a third party, again, added to the medical system.
So the AMA is participating with the insurance companies and the physicians. They've inserted themselves in the process between doctors and insurers to help facilitate the payment process? Is that
yes.
what you're suggesting?
Nobody, no one, no medical practitioner could work with an insurance company without having the CPT coding book and following the guidelines within it, which is, as I understand, published by the AMA.
That's interesting. That's very interesting.
Yes. And
okay.
I was also thinking with regard to the profit side of the information that they're selling that's related to the pharmaceutical use of the mm-hmm. physicians.
Mm-hmm.
And so, briefly, if somebody could do a systematic, detailed, in-depth structure breakdown of the profit side of medicine in the United States, it represents such a huge part of our economy that if that's one of the reasons this big wheel can't be stopped. It's a runaway train because there's so many jobs associated with it that they can't untangle it.
Well, it's not just the jobs. There's so much profit that is making its way into the pockets of politicians, and that's where public financing of campaigns or just massive citizen outrage is going to be the thing that's going to change that. I mean, the fact of the matter was that back in 1928, 1929, there was an enormous amount of profit that was making its way into politicians' pockets. They were basically at the federal level anyway, the politicians were basically the tools of the oligarchs, you know, of the robber barons. And it took the Great Republican Depression of 1929, the crash of 29 and the Republican Great Depression, to wake up enough people that the people power overcame the money power. And the question in my mind is, how long is it going to take for the people power to overcome the money power in the United States now in this era? And I think, frankly, the Iraq War is a good piece of it, but the ongoing destruction of the middle class, people are getting it. I mean, the fact that a third, this is the Wall Street Journal report that Bernie was talking about, a third of Republicans are saying that they think that these international trade agreements are wrong. This tells me that there's a sea change happening in the United States. Thank you very much for the call. Pete in Portland, Oregon. Hey, Pete.
Hello. I just wanted to make sure that your listeners are aware of Paul Jacob, one of the guys behind all the cookie cutter libertarian ballot initiatives going around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Was just indicted the other day in federal court in Oklahoma with the charges conspiracy against the state of Oklahoma. It carries, I think, like 10 to 20 years.
Well, that's interesting. Is he one of the guys behind the Tabor kind of stuff, you mean?
Exactly. The Tabor stuff, the land use stuff like Oregon's Measure 37, term
right.
limits, and any number of other kind of basically issues that completely bypass the democratic institution that stands in the way of their agenda.
Right.
But this is the fourth state now that they've gotten in trouble in. They got measures kicked off the ballot for pervasive petition fraud in Nevada and Montana, and they were kicked out of Illinois for breaking the charity laws there.
Yeah, and there was a lot of evidence here in Oregon after the fact that there was fraud in collecting signatures to put petitions on the ballot. This is one of those things where I really think that any state that has an initiative process, a ballot initiative process, where citizens can play legislators, should make sure that out-of-state interests, or for that matter, well-funded interests within the state, don't get into the process. That if there's a groundswell of support, you know, like the suffrage movement or the prohibition movement, or for that matter, the anti-prohibition movement, if there's a groundswell of support, yeah, citizens should be able to be involved. But some billionaire buying it, no. 27.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at
No, it's not. You know, Ben Franklin started public libraries in the United States as a public utility. Now in Medford, Oregon, they are privatizing their library. I mean, how bad does it get? How far has it come? This is Reaganism on steroids. It's just absolutely wrong.
I've always felt the 9 most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government, and I'm here to help.
Yeah, it's terrifying to have public libraries. Pat in Encinitas, California. Hey, Pat, what's on your mind today?
Morning, Tom. I want to talk about labor a little bit. I think you and I were kids, like in the 50s, 60s. The Democratic Party, when you thought of the same group,
Pat, I'm sorry, I got to put you on hold here, and maybe in a few minutes it'll clear up, but your cell phone is breaking up so badly, I literally am hearing every other word and can't make out what you're saying. Pete in Des Moines, Iowa. Hey, Pete, what's up?
Hey, not too much. I had a couple questions. One of them was, I heard on the news, I believe it was last night, that the Iraqi government contracted for $100 million to buy small arms for mostly their police. And they were AK-47s mostly that are produced in China.
Yeah.
I was wondering, is our tax money going to Iraq so that the Iraqis can give it to China so they can buy weapons?
It may well be, but we're buying, I mean, we can't build a destroyer or a missile right now without parts from China. So we're buying stuff from China, too. I don't know if that's our tax dollars routed through Iraq by way of, you know, foreign aid, or whether that's Iraqi oil revenue that's being used for that. I don't know the details of the story.
You know,
I saw the headline today.
The thing is, if it's Iraqi oil revenue, you know, why are we giving them all this money? If they if they have enough money to spend $100 million to buy weapons to outfit their army in lieu of all the weapons that we already sent over there that we lost, and that would be question number two that I had. We lost, the Pentagon said we lost over $190 million worth of firearms, weapons, and mostly those were AK-47s.
Right, not to mention $6 billion in $100 bills shrink-wrapped in plastic, a chunk large enough to see from outer space, gone missing.
These AK-47s that they lost, where did they come from? So here we are.
Right, and this also raises...
Again,
yeah, and it also raises the question, Pete, of is this a Shia faction within the government that is trying to arm itself against the Sunnis? There was a whole story, and you raise an important point. Whole story in I believe it was the New York Times this morning. It was one of the papers I read. It might have been the Financial Times, about how there is a great concern and a growing concern, an ongoing and growing concern inside Iraq among Iraqi politicians that by the U.S. arming the Sunni tribesmen in places like El Anbar, that what we are doing over the short term, we're giving them the means to defeat their Sunni brethren, the religious fanatics who call themselves Al-Qaeda, even though they have no direct connection to Osama bin Laden and had nothing to do with 9/11. That even though, you know, we're arming the Sunnis to stop the Al-Qaeda guys, that ultimately what we're doing is we're arming the Sunnis to be fighting against the Shia, which is the official government by and large. I mean, it's majority Shia, in an upcoming and far to be worse civil war. This would be like, you know, France coming in and selling weapons to the North and the South aggressively, particularly to the South, in the early 1860s. Not a good thing. Just not a good thing. Leah in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Hey, Leah.
Hi there. I believe that the American people seem to be incredibly naive. I was raised with all the baby boomer propaganda about this and that and the other, and how America was this and America was that. And I've learned over the years that America is a wonderful country, and I love it to death. And the good things about it are great. But America is the number one arms dealer in the world right now.
Yeah, and it has been for a long time, by the way.
I know that. I became unnaive a few years ago. I was like, I got to look into this stuff. And the people, the countries that sit on the Security Council are, you know, second, third, fourth, and fifth in arms dealing. And now China's in on the action, too.
Yep.
And so that makes sense.
And they're also on the
countries.
Security Council.
So the little gun runners that run around selling, and we all yell and scream about those people, oh, how dare they? It's the countries that are selling the most arms.
You're absolutely right, Leah, absolutely right. And one of the reasons why I brought this up a couple of days ago on this program, that this report that had just come out from the United Nations about how the U.S. was the largest seller of arms in the world and arming some of the most unstable and dangerous and despotic regimes in the world, by the way. And my point was, it's not good business. The way that the Bushies and the Republicans sell this, and the Republicans have been selling this for a long, long time, and some Democrats as well, sell this is, oh, well, you know, it's American jobs making these guns and making these bullets and making these bombs and making these shoulder-fired grenades and rocket launchers and whatnot, making these landmines. Well, yes, it does employ Americans. But it employs Americans making something that once it's used, it's gone forever. It doesn't produce any secondary economic activity or benefit. Whereas if Americans are building something like, say, cars, then people can use those cars to go to work, and that builds economic activity. If Americans are building things like public transit, then public transit helps people, helps facilitate commerce. And you know, there's an ongoing, even making clothing, arguably. You wear clothes to work. You wear, you know, it facilitates economic activity. Virtually everything that you make in an economy, including even arguably many consumer items, but particularly the infrastructure stuff, the transportation stuff, the healthcare stuff, things like that. But virtually everything that is made in an economy, except for defense, over the long term has secondary, tertiary, and very often for decades and in some cases even centuries. I mean, look at how long the Brooklyn Bridge has been around. Ongoing contributions to the economy. When you build a bomb and you sell it, the CEO of the company becomes a millionaire and the people get a job, and there's some little trickling of that into the economy. But other than that, that's it, because once that bomb gets dropped on somebody, it has no value anymore. It's not a recoverable value, and it's not contributing to the economy. And so we have an economy in the United States right now that is being held together by spit and glue and rubber bands. And basically the glue and the rubber bands, the spit arguably is just, you know, hype. Hope that everything's going to be okay. And the glue and the rubber bands are debt. We have a debt-based economy. People no longer are working toward owning their own homes. Instead, they're working toward cashing out as much money from their homes as they can so that they can maintain a decent standard of living. Is debt and war. And if we didn't have the war in Iraq, and we still had Bush's tax cuts, his massive tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires, and all of the cuts in social programs and things that we've seen since Clinton declared war on welfare as we know it, well, actually going back to Reagan, then this economy would be in the toilet. The only thing that's providing short-term stimulation to the economy is debt and the manufacturing of weapons of mass destruction, weapons of death, war. And neither one of those things will provide an economy for our children and grandchildren. Neither one of those things builds this nation. Neither one of those things produces a long-term consequence, which is a net positive for America. And that's the horrible tragedy of what comes out of absolute unrestrained laissez-faire capitalism being allowed to participate in a big way. In the bribery, the campaign contributions of our elected officials. We need public financing of elections. It'll cost $6 per person per year to publicly fund the elections of the United States to the level that they have been in recent years. We're talking a lot of money there. $6 a person per year. Public financing of campaigns, and we need to go back to saying we are regulating business in the United States. We are going to enforce the Sherman Act and make it possible for entrepreneurs to start new businesses and for small businesses to flourish. Used to be 30, 40 years ago, people built businesses with the idea of passing them down to their children. Now people build businesses with the idea of, I'm going to get this to the point where I can sell it to Microsoft, or where I can sell it to, you know, fill in the blank, sell it to one of the big monopolies. Because you can't compete beyond a certain point. They will eat your lunch. They'll just roll out a new freebie for Windows or whatever. Not to just pick on Microsoft. They're obviously. And the thing is, it's not that these corporations are evil entities or that they're doing anything illegal. Everything that they're doing is totally legal. It's the rules of the game that we need to change. Brian in Redondo Beach, California. Brian, got to take a break in about a minute. What's up?
Okay. Mine won't take long. I was just wondering, how are you doing today?
I was wondering. Great. But I'll get better. What's up?
If you happen to catch Bill Moore in real time on HBO.
Yeah.
Rahm Emanuel, he was on there, and I kept watching that dude. And he seemed like he was so nervous, and he was shaky, and he was sweating. Where everyone else were calm and cool, they weren't sweating. But he's beating a snare drum for Iran. Yeah. And I'm listening to this man. Everything he said was something about going into Iran. And I was wondering if you caught that, or if anyone else caught that.
You know, I don't have a specific memory of him talking about Iran on the Bill Maher show, but Rahm Emanuel is, you know, up until this last year was the head of the DLC. I think Harold Ford Jr. is the head of the DLC now. He's the Republican light faction in the Democratic Party, and I'm not a fan of Rahm Emanuel. But,
me neither.
You know, at least he's a Democrat. I suppose we have to give him credit for that. But as Bernie said in the last hour, our first priority has to be not just to elect Democrats, to elect progressives, even if they're not affiliated with the Democratic Party, to elect progressives. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're tuned in to the Tom Hartman Program. Fair and slightly unbalanced. This is Air America Radio.
Welcome back. 9.5 minutes before the hour. We'll be back with your calls in just a minute on Anything Goes Friday here. But first, Alan Ratner checking in with the Talk Radio News Circuit Service. Excuse me, TalkRadioNews.com. Our update for the day from Washington, D.C. Hey, Alan.
A little bit from Washington, a little bit from New York. I'm in Washington now, but we've had two of our staffers at the United Nations, where the Security Council is having their Myanmar-Burma discussions, and it is not lost on our staff that this is at the same time that the president is saying no torture going on in the United States, but we're really concerned about this other regime.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of pushback for the Burmese. There's going to be Saturday, tomorrow, in addition to my speaking tomorrow at 6 o'clock at the Green Festival in Washington, D.C., which is the small news. The big news is that Saturday at noon local time in Austria, Australia, Belgium, Canada, India, Ireland, France, New Zealand, South Korea, Thailand, Britain, and in cities across the United States, there are going to be protests, marches in support of the Burmese, the monks, and against the military junta there. The EU is looking into investigations into trade sanctions, and there's an entire movement now to picket and put pressure on Chevron, picket Chevron radio stations, to ask them, since one of the main sources of revenue for these murderous generals in Burma is the millions of dollars a year in natural gas royalties that Chevron pays them, to get Chevron to say, no, we're not going to give you any more money.
There is absolutely no doubt that these are, I've been on the border there, that these are the baddest, baddest guys around. But
I've been on the border there, too, where the Karen refugees are coming across into Thailand.
Yeah. But I got to tell you that to take the supposed high road, saying that, you know, we don't torture, and then to say and to cloak everything in the fact that this has to do with the safety and security of America, is just very, very different experience.
Oh, that, yes, yes, absolutely, yeah.
A couple other things. The president talked this morning about the economic numbers. When you look at the economic numbers that on the surface look quite good, you realize that private sector growth is the weakest since 2003. And in order to really talk about job creation, you're going to need several more months of private job creation to really say that there has been any kind of comeback there.
Yeah, this is the point I made in the last segment, is that without the war economy, this economy would be in the toilet right now because of Reaganomics.
Exactly. Now, the Electronic Privacy Information Center had a briefing this morning at the press club, and one of the things, and we're going to have a much more full report, I can actually put them on our lawyer, who has also been a reporter for us for years, except he dropped out to go to law school, and now he's back with us at least part-time, Jay Tamboli, said that so what was so fascinating about that today is that there has been nothing in the press about us eavesdropping on the Europeans. You know, no, there's a lot of the FISA court stuff, but nobody's complaining about eavesdropping on the Europeans, nor all the retina scans and fingerprints that are being taken of all the Iraqis by the U.S. government, which would allow, if the wrong guy gets in power in Iraq, to really round up Sunni, Shiites, Kurds, or whatever, because of all of that biometric data.
Yeah, yeah. It's a spooky new world, huh?
It's a very, very spooky new world. One other thing, well, there's always other things going on, but John Conyers, through the House Judiciary Committee, had a several-page letter going out. He's very concerned about this phone jamming. That was a very famous case, and I'm sure you've talked about in New Hampshire, and he's worried that the FBI was instructed not to follow investigative leads to Washington on that.
Yeah, and we're also finding, this was over on the Daily Kos, in fact, Marcos himself posted it, that the informant down in Alabama that led to the indictment and conviction of Governor Don Siegelman, the informant who gave that information to the U.S. attorney down there also indicted Jeff Sessions and Mr. Pryor, who are now, you know, U.S. senators and federal judges. They happen to be Republicans, and the U.S. attorney in Alabama chose not to even investigate the two Republicans. He only went after the Democrat. He got information on all three.
It's pretty amazing.
This is where I say the whole U.S. attorney scandal has to do not with the guys who were fired. It has to do with the guys who stayed in office and did exactly what Karl Rove told them to do. This is. You know, frankly, I think this is some of the biggest news of the day. This makes Watergate look like nothing. And I'm just astounded that none of the media has picked up on it.
I know one of the attorneys in Conyers' office, and he is crackerjack and has done a lot of investigations. And I put my money behind him.
Yeah, John Conyers and Henry Waxman as, you know, the mustache of justice. There's some good guys out there doing some good investigations, good men and women.
Last but not least, Condoleezza Rice has ordered a review of security practices in Iraq because of Blackwater and who's being escorted by who and how this is done. And they are now figuring out how they're going to accompany various U.S. security missions, et cetera, there. So this would be kind of interesting to see if anything at all comes out of that.
Yeah, it will be. She's ultimately the employer of all these guys, and the news coming out increasingly is grim. And I mean, that it's what you would expect with a mercenary force, particularly one where L. Paul Bremer, Bush's old Andover roommate, goes in and says, "Oh yeah, these mercenaries we're bringing in here, they're not accountable to Iraqi law, and by the way, they're not prosecutable under U.S. law." Well,
and
not
the
prosecutable.
Problem is, as you know, a lot of the mercenaries are not United States citizens, so they'll just send them back home when there's a problem.
Yes, and, you know, send the bad guys back to South Africa. A lot of them actually are from South Africa. They were the old, back when the whites-only government had this very, very, very brutal army repressive force. A lot of those guys have made their way into some of these private security, so-called security companies. It's incredible. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com on the web. Ellen, thanks so much for dropping by today.
Thank you.
Great talking with you, as always. Coming up next, more of your calls right here on Anything Goes Friday. We got a little bit of news to share with you and more conversation. Stick around.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio. Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Yes, my friends, it's Anything Goes Friday. And definitely in the category of Anything Goes, people voting in droves over at 620kpoj.com for Higgins, my cat. Here's one. The writing candidates, you get to say why you're voting for them. One person says, Higgins, he was raised in a frat house, practices cat box economics, attacks people for no reason, and is just plain insane. The perfect successor to George W. Bush. Yeah, the fact of the matter is, in a straw poll, I would vote for Higgins. I really wouldn't want him president of the United States. He is just too much like George W. Bush. 1-866, even though I love Higgins dearly. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Anything Goes Friday, whatever you want to talk about. Howard in Encino, California. Hey, Howard, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I enjoy your program very much. I've got a question and a comment. The first question is, do you know if Senator Reid has threatened or considered threatening the nuclear option with regard to the 60-vote requirement to cut off debate?
No, he hasn't. There's been no discussion of it from the Democrats whatsoever. And frankly, I don't think that the Republicans ever intended to do it when they controlled the Senate. I think that they were playing a very high stakes game of chicken, and the Democrats blinked.
Well, I think at this point, you're probably right, but I think we've gotten so far down the wrong path that it might be time to really threaten that and follow through with it and not just bluff, because we've got 14 more months of the decider, and God knows what's going to happen.
Yeah. Here's the big problem in the Senate, and this is why, actually, the nuclear option may be a good idea, and why I historically on this program I've said, no, it shouldn't happen, because the Senate is the most deliberative body. It's sort of the flywheel to the House of Representatives. It's the balance, you know, whatever. But the fact of the matter is, and David Sirota pointed this out brilliantly in a column he wrote recently for Creator Syndicate. They've just started syndicating his columns, and if you don't get it, if your local newspaper doesn't carry David Sirota's column, let them know that they can get it from Creator Syndicate, and they should, because he's one of the most brilliant progressives writing right now in America, and one of the only syndicated ones. I think he took over for Molly Ivins. But in any case, he pointed out in his column that because each state gets two senators, the 40-some-odd, as I recall, it was 46 senators from the 23 smallest states. I might be wrong, but it's enough senators basically to block anything. That number of senators represents only 11% of the U.S. population. And in that 11% of the U.S. population, these smallest, you know, 20-some-odd states or 80, whatever the number. I don't have the article in front of me right now. I had it earlier in the week and didn't get to it. That 11% of the U.S. population, that only 6% of the people in those states, so 6% of 11% of the U.S. population, even votes. So we're talking about a fraction of 1% of the voting population of the United States electing senators who are essentially holding the Senate hostage. And it's wrong. And therefore, I think that the nuclear option should be invoked and that they should simply go back to majority rules in the United States Senate because you've got these very small right-wing states that are spinning the entire country.
Right. Don't you think that could be solved by reviving the mantra that the Republicans used about, you know, an up or down vote, what are they afraid
yep.
of?
Yep.
Why don't they let us vote?
I do.
Can I make a quick comment?
Yeah.
When Chris Matthews serves as the moderator next week on the Republican debate, and this is going to get a bit grotesque and macabre, what I'm going to suggest, but at some point the Republicans, they're trying to outdo each other as the Uber Bush on national security and fighting terrorism. They're going to go along with the torture memos. Maybe someone should ask them, where does that stop? If you have a terrorist and he won't talk, shouldn't we bring in his family?
Well, that's what they did in the case of Mohammed Atta, and that's what they've done apparently with a number of other ones. They've brought in their families and they've threatened their families in front of these people.
Well, I heard that they.
And that was not uncommon in Abu Ghraib as well.
Well, I'd like to hear the Republicans go on record as saying, yeah, that's fine. We should do that. And
right.
and maybe
yeah.
if we threaten them and they still don't talk, maybe our interrogation should get a little more robust
yeah.
when it comes to the family. And see if there's any line that
yeah.
they won't.
Yeah, well, the problem is no matter where the line is right now, if there's another terrorist attack in this country, they'll slide even farther down the slope because it is literally a slippery slope. And that's why you don't even start going down it. But, Howard, your point is excellent and well made. And my concern about Chris Matthews, I congratulate him last night for calling out the Republicans and pointing out that they've been lobbying the management of MSNBC to change the content of his show. But where was he, you know, a couple of years ago when apparently this was happening? Why was he not calling them out on that? And it has just very much seemed to me like Chris Matthews has been a Giuliani partisan for a long time, by the way. I mean, he's talking about go check out Intrade to see who the candidate is that's most ahead. Looks to me like Mitt Romney's most ahead, or at least was the last time I looked. It was 3 or 4 days ago on Intrade. But Matthews seems to be just absolutely committed to there being a Clinton versus Giuliani race. And I'm not sure why. You know, I don't know, you know, who he knows or what the deal is or whatever. It'd be interesting to ask him, but it just as a longtime watcher of that show. Paul Loeb, by the way, my old friend from Seattle, the author of a number of brilliant books, including there's a variety of titles. Paul has an op-ed piece that is offering a very interesting suggestion. He is suggesting that Barack Obama and John Edwards, that this might be the only way to stop Hillary Clinton. Paul makes it right up front that he thinks Edwards is the best candidate, but that he also, when he goes to an Obama thing and he sees all the young people and all the enthusiasm, it just lifts his heart. And I would say, you know, I share his sentiments. He says that if Obama and John Edwards were to team up and publicly declare that whichever one is the nominee for the party for president, they will nominate the other as vice president. Right now, we know it'll be either an Obama-Edwards ticket or an Edwards-Obama ticket. And just make that statement that it would take down Hillary Clinton. That's an interesting idea. It's within the Democratic Party. Interesting. Juan in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Juan, what's on your mind today? Nope, I guess whatever was on his mind is gone now. Linda in Gold Hill, Oregon. Hey, Linda.
Hi, how are you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
I just wanted to make a comment about the Jackson County Library System.
Right, in Medford, Oregon, that's being privatized.
Right, not just in Medford, but the entire Jackson County.
Oh, it's the whole county. Okay.
Yeah, it's the whole county. And the reason that it is because the ONC Trust, Oregon, Nevada, California Trust, that the federal government used to pay to the to all the counties in Oregon based on how much land the federal government owned. They used to pay us for the timber. We no longer get paid for that ever since the spotted owl incident about 15 years ago.
Right, because there's less logging, there's less federal money coming in.
There's almost no logging at all.
It's absolutely bizarre that the funding of things like libraries depends on whether or not there's logging that destroys endangered species.
Well, the problem is that almost all of Jackson County is owned by either the state or the federal government. There are no homes in the mountains where the trees are. So nobody pays taxes. Nobody pays, property taxes on that property, and therefore the county doesn't have any income.
Right. All the more reason for the federal government, regardless of whether the land is being logged, to pick up some of the public utilities, since they own so much of the land and they're not paying property taxes on it.
And we wish us all a rot's a ruck for to get the federal government to give us a dime.
Yeah.
So,
amen.
Anyway, that's why they privatized the library. It wasn't because anybody wanted to do that. There just wasn't any funds.
No, I understand, and I assume that that was the case. It was.
The sheriff's department is in the same predicament.
Oh, my. Are they going to privatize the sheriff's department there, Linda?
I have no idea what they're going to do. Nobody really, this is Oregon. What are you going to do?
Yeah. Well, it's not just Oregon. I'm telling you, this is happening all across the United States. I grew up in Michigan. I have a lot of relatives there. Michigan is struggling with some real serious problems, particularly in the areas around Flint and Detroit, and Lansing right now, of what to do, because revenues are going down because the manufacturing jobs are going overseas. The good paying jobs are gone. And the companies are no longer paying taxes there. They're doing their business internationally. They're out, keeping their profits offshore. They're not bringing the money into the United States. They're not paying taxes on it. They don't have employees who are paying taxes. They're not paying matching taxes. The property is declining in value because it's not being used, so their property taxes are going down. And as a result, everything's going away.
You're listening to Tom Hartman, defending America from the weapons of mass deception on Air America Radio.
Yes, it's our Anything Goes Friday, 866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartman.com, if you want to drop into our live chat room and say hi. Just take a brief step back from our calls here for a moment. Something I want to share with you. This is just so cool. Sebastian Kunz is on the line with us. He's the news anchor for Green 960, AM 960 down in San Francisco, our San Francisco affiliate. It used to be known as the Quake. Their website, green960.com, and they're auctioning off a seat in a helicopter ride for the Beach Impeach on eBay, and beachimpeach.com is the website. Sebastian, welcome to the program.
Good morning, Tom. Happy Friday. Let me just at the top correct you. It's beachimpeach.org, so we get it completely correct. It's a nonprofit.
Are you sure? Because I'm looking at beachimpeach.com, and I'm seeing it.
Oh, wow.
Maybe
okay. I didn't realize it worked for both. Forgive me. Then that's my mistake.
Apparently, you've grabbed both URLs. Yeah, if that's the Beach Impeach 4, October 7 at 11 a.m. at the Berkeley Marina.
It cannot be anything else. That's exactly
Cindy
where I'm going to be. I'm going to be in one of the helicopters as well, sort of above, photographing it all. They're expecting at least 1,000 people, perhaps up to 1,500 folks, all of them laying down on the beach and spelling out the word impeach. It's not even the first time they've done it.
Doing it with their bodies.
With their bodies. There's a whole huge call. In fact, they're actually still looking for participants, as I understand. You can either just show up. I guess they do prefer it if you register on their website ahead of time, maybe let them know the number of folks that are coming and stuff. And there's all kinds of transit information available on the Internet for people in the Bay Area who want to participate. But the funny thing to me is that they're also auctioning, as you said, one of the seats on one of the helicopters on eBay. They're actually holding an auction on the Internet. And I think the bid last I checked was like as up to $400 or something.
That's great. This is not one of those nude beach, like they've been doing in Europe, where everybody takes their. Actually, I think there's been a couple in the United States. Everybody takes their clothes off and lays down.
That's not my impression. The pictures I'm looking at from previous events, they're photographed from a pretty high altitude, so it's not exactly clear. But I think the folks down there have clothes on.
Yeah, there's a lot of color in there, which looks like, red shirts and blue jeans and stuff like that.
Exactly.
So, maybe we could get some bikini. Well, I'm starting to sound like an old sexist pig here. Anyhow, we're talking with Sebastian Kunz. He's the news anchor for Green 960 and also 910 KNEW in San Francisco. And the Great Beach Impeach. And Sebastian, thanks for sharing that story with us. Is there anything else you want to let our listeners know about it?
Well, I'm gonna, as I said, I'm going to be up there over the event photographing it. So there will be a video and pictures. In fact, one of the journalists who's covering this is actually 13 years old. We met at the Impeach Bush blimp launch here in the federal building in San Francisco. And he's a, sort of a YouTube-style teenage journalist. And I have a feeling he's going to be my boss someday. He's actually really good. And you can find the previous Beach Impeach videos on the YouTube and other places on the Internet as well.
Great. Beachimpeach.com. And this isn't just for people in the San Francisco Bay Area. I mean, if you're in the San Francisco Bay Area, obviously show up and go out and participate. But communities all over America should be taking a lesson from this. I mean, this using theater to make a political point is one of the finest American traditions, whether it's very serious theater or whether it's very funny theater. And this is just marvelous.
And that, Sebastian... They do describe this as sort of a kind of theatrical or performance event, in fact. And the organizer, Brad Newsham, was telling me that he's almost feeling kind of a lack of coverage, even from the liberal media, if you will, about the sort of impeachment movement. And so they're trying to try and increase the visibility of all this. And I think this is one really unique way of doing it. And like you said, there's places everywhere that have even handfuls of people that maybe are feeling neglected by the media. So
I'll tell you, here in Portland, Oregon, and many of the cities that I've traveled around the United States. I was up in Seattle a couple of weekends ago. I was in New York a while back. I was in Michigan even. You will find, particularly on the weekends, sometimes one single person, sometimes five people, sometimes 10, 20 people. There's a regular one here in one of the suburbs, that a fellow by the name of Ben has put together out in Hamilton, that, 50, 60 people, every Wednesday night, where they're just standing there with candles, or they're standing there with signs that say impeach, or they're standing there with signs that say enough, you know, this thing that Cenk Uygur started. And Americans are out there and they are speaking out. And you're absolutely right. The mainstream media in particular, and even the media on our side, not giving it that much attention. And I think it deserves a whole lot more.
Well, I do think this weekend is going to be quite an event. It's the fourth such Beach Impeach, and it doesn't show any signs of slowing down. Even Cindy Sheehan is going to be there on Sunday morning.
Oh, that's great. She's going to give a speech?
She is expected to be one of the special guests. From what I'm reading, they did invite Nancy Pelosi to be part of, actually, to sit in one of the helicopters and see from above. And I guess she said no thanks.
She had other priorities.
That's what it seems to be. And I think that's actually the seat they are auctioning on eBay.
Oh, and they're auctioning off Nancy Pelosi's seat.
What would have been Nancy Pelosi's seat. That's correct.
Amazing. Sebastian Kunz, the news anchor for Green 960, our affiliate in San Francisco. Sebastian, thanks for dropping by.
My pleasure, Tom.
Beachimpeach.com, beachimpeach.org. For more information, you can check it out. It's fascinating. We'll be back with your phone calls here on Anything Goes Friday, 866-303-2270, TomHartman.com. Drop by our live chat room. And also... just a quick note, the Fox and Friends thing I'll be on is at 4:15 Pacific Time, 7:15 Eastern Time.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Four minutes past the hour. Anything Goes Friday. Heather in Colorado. Hey, Heather, what's on your mind today?
Hey, I just first want to say thank you for fighting the good fight and being a cheerleader for the underdog.
You're welcome.
I actually called about the state of the insurance industry, which I'm sure you're sort of familiar with.
Oh, boy, am I ever. My personal, for Louise and I, our personal insurance coverage just got renewed, you know, the annual renewal thing. And I spent an hour sitting here going through this web site for the insurance company. Would you rather have a $5,000 out-of-pocket or a $3,000 out-of-pocket? But with the $5,000 out-of-pocket, it's $300 if you go to the – it's nuts. I mean, would you have bad choice A or bad choice B? Would you have worse choice A or worse choice B? And do you want to be out-of-system or in-system? Well, it's going to cost you a lot more out-of-system. And these guys are running around going, John Edwards is going to make it so that you have to have an annual exam. Well, no, what he was suggesting was that people who have an annual physical exam can get a lower cost for Medicare. And I mean, that's nothing compared to what the insurance companies are inflicting on us right now.
I agree. I just lost my job because the doctor that I was working for had to close her doors because she can't get the insurance companies to pay her.
Yeah. And part of the reason why they're not paying her is the situation that I've observed, which is every time Louise or I go to the doctor, and thank God it happens rarely, but the last couple of years that we've been living here and had this insurance company, every time we go to the doctor, before they will pay a bill that the doctor submits, they send us a letter saying, you must call us and notify us that this is an actual legitimate charge, or we will default to not paying it. And then you call them, and they put you on hold for a half hour before you finally get through to a person. And then even then, on several occasions, we've said, yes, this is a legitimate bill. Please pay it. They don't pay it. They send out another letter saying, we haven't heard from you. And it's like they're just it's this giant scam. The insurance companies are so committed to not paying for health care in order to inflate profits so people like Bill McGuire, the guy with United Healthcare, can take home his $1.7 billion paycheck and cut a deal with the American Association of, or the AARP, I guess it's called now, with the AARP, so that they can basically fleece old people.
I agree. I'm actually uninsurable now because I have celiac disease, which I think is the biggest load of crap I've ever heard.
We are in the same boat, Heather. I have celiac disease as well. And for people who don't know, Keith Olbermann has celiac disease. It's a condition where if you eat wheat, it just blows out your intestines. You can't eat anything with gluten in it. And it's a hereditary condition. And so now I have a pre-existing condition. Right.
Yeah.
And so do you. And it makes it damn hard to get insurance. And once you get it, you got to fight with an insurance company for it. And this is just crazy. This is crazy.
No, I'm actually a teacher for gluten-free living and for gluten-free cooking. And I do consulting. And that's like what I do as a job. But I obviously can't control it enough for the insurance companies to be satisfied that I'm not going to go out and kill myself with it.
Yeah, right. Like you and I are going to run right out and eat a pizza really fast.
Yeah.
Although I got to tell you, there's some great products out there. Madwoman Bakery, one of our advertisers, local sponsors in Minneapolis, they make such incredible gluten-free stuff. It is awesome. Their pizza is some of the best I've ever had in my life. The muffins and cakes and there's a lot of great. But we digress. Anyhow, Heather. I absolutely agree with you. Our health insurance system is collapsing around us, and Americans are aware of it. I think that this is the reason why
we should all drop it.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
Everybody should just one day drop their insurance.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of people can't do that. I mean, that's what we need to do is we need to vote into power politicians who are going to go for it. This is where I salute Harry Reid. I mean, Harry Reid gets a lot of heat on this program for wimping out, but he has said he is not going to modify the S-CHIP program. He's going to call for a vote to override the presidential veto, and hopefully he'll call for a vote day after day after day to override that veto until he gets enough senators on board and shame the Republicans into this. Heather, I got to move along, but thank you very much for the call, and good luck staying away from gluten. It's a challenge, but we can do it, right? Carol in Michigan. Hey, Carol, welcome to the program.
Hi. I like the way you walk the walk. I have an anything goes subject for Friday about afternoon tea. I have a visual here of a tea mug that has a clipper on it, which you think about the shipping, and that's my first point, that with free trade, there's just seems like a crazy amount of shipping of, like washing machines or whatever back and forth, and China should make their washing machines and we should make ours. And then
it would be a nice idea. 40% of all international trade, and some estimates are as high as 60, but the relatively official government numbers that I've seen, 40% of all international trade is from a company overseas to that same company within the United States. In other words, it's simply the offshoring of labor, nothing else. It's not even It's not even that an American company is buying cheap stuff from a Chinese company. It's that an American company is bringing in cheap stuff that they made in their factory in China, 40% of all international trade. And this is the kind of stuff that we should be encouraging with free trade agreements? No.
And then during the strike, the short strike in Detroit, a woman was talking about the Chinese like Buick, so I'm thinking, well, it makes sense to build Buicks in China. And when it comes to this mug, it also has a Chinese motif and Chinese teapot with the Chinese people, gentlemen on it. And then on the bottom it says, this is just sort of a wordplay, fine bone China. And when I looked at it, I said, oh, thank God it's not made in China. It's made in England because it won't have lead in it.
Oh, isn't that interesting? Carol, thanks for that. Actually, you know, a Chinese teak pot with a Chinese motif on it, very elegantly made in China, is the kind of stuff that we should be importing from China. I mean, the whole point of free trade is to be able to have products that you wouldn't otherwise have, because there's nobody in your country who would be making those things, because there's not a huge enough demand for them. Or where there is large demand, it's because you can't make them. We can't make French wine in the United States. We can make some very good wines, but we can't make French wine in the United States. You can't make, Swiss cheese. You can make that brand, but, I mean, not Swiss cheese from Switzerland. So there's a reason why you import unique products. But washing machines, cars, we can make those things anywhere. Eric in Huntington Beach, California. Hey, Eric.
Hey, Tom. How's it going?
Good. What's up?
A couple things real quick. The U.S. Coast Guard is now self-declaring itself to be a branch of military. It's on its own website. If you think about that, the Commandant himself actually doesn't report to the Joint Chiefs of Staff. He reports directly to the President. Beyond that, they're doing this to brand the Coast Guard and sell weapons platforms, interdiction platforms, drones, cutters. They're loading in-close weapon systems, Phalanx Gatling guns that they use in the Navy that fire 3,500 rounds per minute of depleted uranium, on Coast Guard vessels now. They're carrying on military tribunals of citizens within the Coast Guard proceedings, and there's a whole series of investigations before the Coast Guard subcommittee, the Subcommittee on Coast Guard and Marine Transportation, that goes all the way up to the Commandant himself, Admiral Thad Allen, and corruptions within the administrative process. There's an ALJ in there, this guy Brudzinski, who ruled on a case called Rendon. It's got the case here. It's Rendon versus Transportation Security Administration. Mm-hmm. It went all the way to the Sixth Circuit. It was an administrative law case. But then it was actually brought into the civilian sector for you and I. It was a Department of Homeland Security agent who went before a screener at the airport, started cussing, and he's on duty. He's always on duty. He's Homeland Security. Started cussing. They fined him $700. It went before this judge. He said it's not a burden upon free speech. It went to the Sixth Circuit. They upheld it. So now all of us are responsible, because this case was set up. It was constructed that if we curse, not just in the airport, in a taxi, in a rail, in a Amtrak or any other place, we're all liable now for a $700 fine.
That's bizarre. And the hypermilitarization of the Coast Guard, is this part of the so-called war on terror, or part of the so-called war on illegal immigrants?
All of that and the war upon Americans and America and the middle class. But if you think about it, too, is that they're literally, for any captain on, say, like a tugboat or a barge, like inland waterways, Mississippi, Great Lakes, they now come under a military tribunal, which is a judge advocate general proceeding, and they're denied counsel.
Amazing. Amazing. Eric, thanks for the heads up on that. Al in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Al.
Hey, Tom. How's it going? You know, that Gail had a pretty good point about dropping your insurance. Yeah. If everybody dropped their insurance and showed up at the emergency rooms of all the hospitals instead of the doctor's office, because Bush said a couple of weeks ago, you can always go to the emergency room, then maybe we get some attention brought to the fact about the healthcare situation.
Yeah.
cut out the insurance companies altogether.
Do we have to have a general boycott? I think that what we need is to get politically active. People showing up and drinking liberally and Democracy for America and the local Democratic Party and the local Republican Party and joining the local Green Party and actually getting out there and getting active. It's not enough to just vote. We have to get active and get going with this thing. Because if we don't show up, if we just sit on our butts through this election, or frankly through the time leading up to this election, we're just going to get more of the same. Whether it's Republican or Democratic for that matter, we're just going to get more of the same. It's time for us to not just start electing progressives, but start behaving like progressives, getting out there and being proactive. 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio.
I see trees of green. Red roses too. I see them bloom for me and you. And I think to myself, what a wonderful world.
A special thanks. Thanks so much to my producer, David Poole, to Louise Hartman, to Chris Lopresto and Lauren Kirchner at Air America Radio New York, to Sue Nethercutt, the folks in our chat room, and Mike Toth, who does our audio archives on our website, to our affiliates, our sponsors, and to you for listening. You all make the program possible. Thank you so much. Eric in Columbia, South Carolina. Hey, Eric, welcome to the program.
Hey, Tom, how you doing?
Fine. What's up?
I just wanted to get your take. I'm sure you've spoken about it before. Just on the whole Rush situation, it just seemed a little bit to me that his words were taken out of context and that the comments made by Harry Reid and others just seemed a little bit unnecessary.
How were Rush's comments taken out of context?
Well, like if you read the transcripts and you get everything all together, he was speaking about that one soldier in particular that had lied about his service and also others that had done the same thing, and it seemed like he didn't even come up with that term "phony soldiers." It was spoken.
Well, I know earlier. It was a caller who said it first. I know that he has been saying that on the radio. Let's listen to the actual original clip, and I'll let you make up your own mind here, Eric. Here it is.
Okay. You know, keep the troops safe, whatever. It's not possible intellectually to follow these people.
No, it's not. And what's really funny is they never talk to real soldiers. They like to pull these soldiers to come up out of the blue and spout to the media.
The phony soldiers.
If you talk to a real soldier, they're proud to serve. They want to be over in Iraq. They understand their sacrifice, and they're willing to sacrifice for the country.
They joined to be in Iraq. You know where you're going these days, the last 4 years, if you sign up. The odds are you're going there or Afghanistan or somewhere.
Now, that was the actual clip in context, unedited. And Rush was the guy who said phony soldiers, not the caller. And he then continued to say they four times afterwards, and there was an S at the end of soldier. So I don't get it, Eric, how you can say either A, it was taken out of context, or B, he was talking about one guy.
I feel that this whole thing, I feel like it's just people trying to get back at Rush and others because of the betray us thing. I feel like they needed to find something somewhere, and once they caught on to like something that Rush had said that might have seemed to be bad towards the soldiers, and they grabbed on it, because he's never ever been against the soldiers in any way, shape, or form. So why would he say?
I would submit to you, Eric, that Rush is against the soldiers every single day that he suggests that they should stay in the middle of a civil war, which is unwinnable, in an occupation. Well, 4 years after we won the war, We won the war. We took down the government of Saddam Hussein. We took down the government of Iraq. We occupied their buildings. We won the war. Then began a five-year now occupation that has been totally screwed up, and the soldiers should not be doing that occupation. We should be doing it the way it was done in Europe, where we give the money not to Blackwater, not to Bechtel, but to the country itself and say, here, you guys rebuild yourself. You rebuild your own cement factories. You rebuild your own contracting companies, rather than having Bechtel bring people in from Sri Lanka, because the labor is cheaper than even Iraqi labor. I mean, this and to have our soldiers be the ones who are being shot at because of the stupidity of the Bush administration policies in this, simply because they believe that somehow the free market and their Republican contractor cronies could do we're going to mysteriously, magically make everything better. That is trashing the soldiers.
Yeah, but if the soldiers are already there, like, shouldn't we be supporting them as opposed to just yelling at the Bush administration for putting them there in the first place? I mean,
absolutely.
There.
And the best way to support them is to bring them back home and reunite them with their families. Eric? Okay. I guess that's the end of that. Rob in Long Island. I didn't hang up on him. Hey, Rob, what's up?
Hey, Tom, how are you? I had a weird thought. I wanted to make a comment, and I wanted to ask you a quick question also. Something that just occurred to me, a friend of mine and I were talking yesterday, and I came up with this theory. Do you think it's possible that the reason why the Republican Party specifically wants a working poor class rather than a middle class is because when there was a middle class, there were unions and certain securities, and you weren't living paycheck to paycheck, so that in a situation like this where you have such a failed policy and such a massive fraud, failure that's going on in Washington, instead of having people who would love to go and protest and can afford to take a week or a month off of work, they can't do that because if you walk off your job as an hourly earner or whatever, you're not going to be able to have a job when you come back, A. And B, I've been hearing, I sometimes listen to Michael Savage when I want to know what the bat crap crazy left side, right side of the fence is talking about. And he mentioned something about free tax versus fair tax or something like that. And I was wondering if you could comment on that.
Yeah, I don't know about Savage's thoughts on taxes, Rob, but I will say that what you just articulated in terms of the war against the middle class is the central thesis of my book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class. I absolutely agree with you. Absolutely. Absolutely. Vicky in New York City. Hey, Vicky, we've got about a minute here before we've got to wrap up the show today. Vicky? No Vicky. Okay. Marsha in St. Louis, Missouri. Hey, Marsha. No Marsha. Sharon in Camino Island, Washington. Hey, Sharon?
Oh, hi there. Third striker. I always love it. These rust defenders, they remind me of that. Who are you going to believe, me or your lying eyes? But that's not what I called about. I called about the AMA. A year or so ago during the medical malpractice discussions, I heard another Air America host talking about the history of the AMA. And they were founded, as a conservative political group. And that's what
right.
they are. And their membership is really only about 30% of all doctors. Now,
and in fact, Ronald Reagan recorded one of the first audio tapes to the AMA, which is rather iconic.
Right.
But,
and we know they're paid by the drug companies all the time, so beware of anything by the AMA, which I call the American Murderers Association. But anyway.
Okay. We got to leave it at that, Sharon. But, and I wouldn't call them that, but you're a good point. Coming up Monday, Rich Galen, senior advisor to Fred Thompson, is going to be with us. Michael Shipler here about what we can learn from Nepal and your calls. And don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. And by the way, if you're in Washington, D.C., I'll be on the main stage at the Washington, D.C. Green Conference tomorrow at 6 p.m. I'll be on Fox and Friends tomorrow morning at 7:15 a.m. Eastern Time. See you Monday.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.